That music can mean only one thing.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I have no idea. All right, Michael Steele is in Miami where, oh my gosh, what a goofy thing that was last night. First of all, I turned it on and I thought, oh my God, I got the secondary audio on. Oh no, I don't. No, I don't.
That's the first time anyone say that. That is so funny. There was a moment. The thing was priceless about that was the look on Cory Booker's face. It was priceless. He just looked at him like,
But then he did it. That was the damnedest thing. Everybody who tried it, I think that that Jay Inslee started speaking Pig Latin at one point, thinking, hey, I got to do something. Ump tray, impeach A. You know, it was very weird. Can I just stop? Everybody's talking about the winners and losers. Beto O'Rourke did not acquit himself very well. Beto O'Rourke kept agreeing. When people were talking about how bad he was nodding his head in the affirmative. You know, that was a mistake.
you hit that wall where people say, that just wasn't good. And you're going, yeah,
I guess.
I know. It was an interesting night. And if you're an Elizabeth Warren, and we're going to see this when you've got Biden and company on stage, your whole goal here is not to improve, all right? If I'm sitting at 30% in the field, the next person closest to me is 20 points away, mm-hmm. right? I'm not looking to improve. What I'm looking to do is maintain. So, you know, folks are going to be punching. Typically, they punch up. What I thought was intriguing and smart was what Julian Castro did. He didn't punch up. He didn't punch up at Elizabeth Warren. He didn't punch up at the people who were ahead of him, per se. He punched to his left, looking from his position on the stage,
right.
at Beto O'Rourke, and summarily took him down. That was, if kids out there, if you want to see an example of having your not only your lunch taken from you, but your after school money as well.
Cell phone, bike,
cell phone,
right? House keys, all gone.
House keys.
Yeah, it was a damn thing.
Julian is now living in Beto's house.
Well, don't you? Now, smart of Julian Castro, because that's the Castro brothers in Texas. You know, you've got a congressman, you got a mayor. Right? I mean, these are people. These are public servants who are well known in San Antonio. That area. What is interesting to me is that Beto, you know, has been a guy who has sort of, you know, he by calling himself Beto and all that, he's trying to make ambiguous his heritage and all that.
His Irish roots.
Yes, exactly right. His Irish roots. So what they're doing is
he speaks Spanish with a brogue. What do I know?
Well, he does kind of. I got to be honest. His Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, and I didn't think his Spanish was that good. It was interesting to watch Julian Castro go, hey, this guy's been playing around like this for a long time. Yeah, he got close on Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz is creepy, but that's just not enough. And so if you're really looking for an Hispanic heritage guy, I'm the guy. And he's impressive. And these are all smart guys. Beto's a smart guy, but he's just in the wrong place. I'm surprised that I don't think he can quit today or tomorrow, but I would say he'll be suspending his campaign probably by the middle of July because I think the money's going to dry.
I think he goes longer than that. I think he makes it to Labor Day. He's going to be, unless he takes a massive slip in the polling, which, even if he did that, he's still, from the money standpoint, going to be competitive. He's going to be competitive only because he's got money. And he's got personal money that he can put into it if he needs to float himself. So yeah. I suspect he can be there after Labor Day. But this is where it gets ugly real fast. When voters start to come back from their holidays of the summer, kids are back into routines, things settle down, people then start to turn attention to the upcoming primary. Because when you get to the end of September, by the time everyone gets through all their vacation credits,
right.
You've got October, November, December. January, you're in the paint. That's your, the moment begin, because the first Tuesday in February, you're off to the races. So that's when voters start to narrow this field down. You've got to be able to show real game, because remember, there's six debates. This is only the first one over two nights. The second one, I know Tom Perez, he and I were talking about this yesterday, hopes it's one night, which means they want to whittle that field down. So I suspect that close to half of the people on the stage over the two-night period won't be there by the time you get to the debate in July, which means that when you get to September, August, September, that field is going to whittle itself down, and Beto wants to be in play there. What I've said is, after last night's performance, and look, we can't discount it. We know Mitt Romney came back and had a great debate. Barack Obama had a great debate after getting clobbered by Mitt Romney. So those things happen. But for me, Ro, it was one of those moments where I went, dude, you're going to be looking for a presidential campaign, because I just don't see it.
Yeah. Well, he looked to me, he had an expression on his face a couple times when he was asked the question, and he was like mouthing along with the question. He looked like a kid at a spelling bee, right? Who was like mouthing in his head, like they'd just given him the word, and he's like, and then use it. Could you use it in a sentence? I was surprised he didn't ask Lester to do that. It was weird. I felt like he, for a guy that really, had certainly raised a lot of profile. I just I didn't see a whole lot of substance. Tulsi Gabbard, I didn't think had a particularly good night. She's an interesting play. I think she tried to old herself up by putting that white streak in her hair. That was weird. It was like a Pepe Le Pew cartoon where she walked under a paintbrush or something, and then all of a sudden the skunk is interested in her. That was weird. I don't know why she did it. The guy from who are those other people? I mean, it was a guy from Maryland, right?
Yeah, well, I was going to say my congressman. He's not my congressman. He's in the district, a couple of districts over. But Congressman Delaney, I thought he acquitted himself very well. Yeah. If you kind of listen to what he was saying, it was some really good rational stuff. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that will translate very well in Iowa, New Hampshire, obviously, but certainly in a general election in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota.
He was a working class guy.
Yeah,
it was interesting. He's from Western Maryland, right? So near the West Virginia border, something like that. Yeah, so that makes a ton of sense. For a guy I never heard of before, he acquitted himself. The guy who scared me was the guy on the right who had the crazy eyes, who had the eyes every time he had the little short hair, crazy eyes. I've seen those guys at bars. You know, they just came off of a workout, and they might have gone to the bathroom to do a bump, and the next thing you know, they're in the bar, and they're like, hey, what's going on? Hey, hold on. And he couldn't hear any of the questions. Repeat that. What'd you say? But, all right, so now the other Jay Inslee, a governor, now I think he's making a mistake by being the I'm going to focus solely on one thing, climate change. He is a chief executive. He's got a story to tell. He was kind of pugilistic.
It's a total misreading of what's going to get you through a Democratic primary. Yes, everyone dancing on Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal or having fits over environmental policy as the world is imploding. But what's the number one issue driving Democratic primary voters? Healthcare. What's the second issue that's driving Democratic primary voters? Donald Trump. So you've got to play to your audience, and your audience is talking about one thing. You're laying down tracks on healthcare. And, he was doing some interviews. He was talking earlier about on shows today about the idea that I didn't get enough time to talk about. The environment.
Yeah,
yeah, I was like, okay, that's fine. Your time is what you make it. So, sure, that's all you want to talk about. But if the issue is foreign policy, you can't talk about environmental. If the issue is, dealing with the police or community policing as a governor, Dude, that's right up your alley. That's a home run.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You want to flip back to the environment? I mean, come on. Stop it.
Bill de Blasio did pretty well, I thought. Although, what's really funny is in New York, everybody hates Bill de Blasio right now. And you should always look at that and say, you know, from their hometown, how are they feeling about how he's governing them? It's the same thing about Donald Trump. If you ask people, you know, they love Donald Trump in the middle of Kansas. But in New York City, they can't stand the guy. And he's from there, right? I mean, it's like, it is one of those moments where, you know, you kind of get what you get. All right, let's leave last night for a second. I want to talk about what happened this morning at the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Now, this is a big deal. Two major decisions were made. And the one about gerrymandering, I think was kind of expected. But it is disappointing to a lot of people who are, you know, looking for fair maps.
Can let me jump on that real quick. I think the Supreme Court has shown themselves to be wimps when it comes to, and this is Roberts, and I get what Justice Roberts is coming from. This is clearly his architecture. He does not like the politicization of the Supreme Court. Number one, he wants to take political questions that come before the court off the table. But there is some precedent for the court to act in this space. And they've done it before, and they've done it in a way in which they say to the states when they start behaving badly politically, no, they do their appropriate judicial role and slap their hands and set the record. I mean, there's
a reason
why. Because they're
doing something that's unconstitutional.
Right, and there's a reason why courts at the federal level, and certainly lower federal courts, and even courts at the state level, will sometimes take the political reins, if you will, and redirect behavior. And that's perfectly okay. So I thought they kind of wimped out on this one, on the gerrymandering case a little bit, because they could have settled this, because these maps are atrociously and grotesquely partisan to the detriment, I think the unconstitutional detriment, meaning that it directly impacts the individual's franchise, mm-hmm. Their right and ability to vote, the way that some of these maps are drawn. But they kicked it back to the states and basically said, you guys work it out, and the way you got to work it out is either voters vote a different legislature to draw the maps, or you put ballot initiatives initiatives on the ballot that would create the appropriate commissions to draw the maps.
Ah, the old states' rights dodge. All right, now this other decision is really kind of the trickiest one, which is that they've pushed back to the lower court, the Southern District of New York court, the case about the citizenship question on the 2020 census. Now, the problem with this is, and the president has since tweeted saying he may push back the census now because until the Supreme Court can make a decision, because the Supreme Court should be doing their job. Next thing you know, he's going to take a shot at Roberts or even his own guy. You know, God knows what he'll do. But here's the mistake that the president might be making. That case at the Southern District of New York is evolving. That's not a case that was waiting for the Supreme Court.
Right.
They have new information. They're reopening that case because they found that there was an active, they found emails.
They've got emails.
Between members of the White House, people at the White House, and the Commerce Department, in which they discuss the nefarious reasons they want that question on.
Yeah.
I mean, they admit that they're trying to suppress the vote by doing that.
Yeah, so here's how this is going to play out. President is not going to extend the census. Why? Because the states won't allow it. The states are flip. I mean, this is a process that you've got to go through.
It's in the Constitution, too. It's got to
get done. In the Constitution. There's a clock on this, number one. Number two, you do not want, because I guarantee you, you will be sued, and those emails now become evidence, you know, exhibit A in intent. And there's no way, I mean, because what the court said today was essentially You know, we don't know what the intent was, because that was not evidence that was a part of that information given to the court.
Right.
Now you have that. So right. The court was basically saying, we kick it back to you guys, and you can start, you can, you know, try it again. But the court basically, to your point, Ro, about the clock, knows there's not enough time, which is why the president countered with, well, I just may extend the clock on it.
Yeah.
He's not. Because given the information we now know, he just needs to leave it alone.
Well, he should. Because what, I mean, the thing is, you know, anything that we would have been a scandal years and years and years ago no longer is. And, you know, we could just debate all day long why that is. But it is that case. This is pretty damning. The email chain going back and forth, again, between the White House and the Commerce Department is basically saying, hey, we're doing this dirty trick. And that's an admission that they're, and they made it, and the justices mentioned this, that though it's not part of the case, you know, new information is coming available that needs to be put into the process.
Yeah.
They opened the door for that. Like, hey, don't bring this back to us until you decide this, because this is not going to happen this way. And,
and
Donald Trump's trying to make it I think he's once again counting on people not paying all that much attention to it. And he might be right, but the fact is that this is bad. And I'm just going to end on this, which is, this is the part that really gets me about where the Republican Party is right now. When you have emails like that, and you know, we can do all the whataboutism we want, but the reality is, when you have emails like that going back and forth, it should be a stain. It should be, the people should be saying, we're ashamed of this. We don't want to be like this. We want to be fair dealers here. The Republicans want to at least be on the up and up. There's a reason they should have just stuck with their story, which was, you know, this is about the Voting Rights Act, about securing the Voting Rights Act, when they're basically saying, ha, 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 that was never about that. We want to suppress the vote. And it's like, I mean, come on. Come on, Wilbur Ross. You might be Methuselah, but you should know better.
Yeah. Well, you know, the party's checked out on anything that remotely close to being accountable, responsible, and all of that, and you know, understanding where the bright line of right and wrong exists. They're beyond that. So I've lost hope for any type of protection, if you will, against those nefarious activities when it comes to them. But that's why the court's role is so important, which goes back to the first case, why I think the court cannot, in this political environment, take a pass on the politics. You can be judicial without being political. And I think that essentially is a very important element, given that this will not be the last case of its kind on either of these subjects, to get before this court under the current regime. And if that regime is extended, and I use that term deliberately, regime, if that's extended beyond 2020, you're guaranteed you're going to see suits to come. Look at what the lower courts are already doing, Ro, on accessing financial records of Trump enterprises now. The court has said, green light, you can do it.
We're all interested. We'd all like to see it.
Right.
Yeah.
So the upside is not there for this administration on these types of cases. And from the Supreme Court's view, if you will, of their perch, they have to realize that you're not going to be able to avoid it. You're going to have to look this particular ugly political mess in the eye and clean it up.
Historically, after the war, after post-war America, second terms of presidents have been fraught with scandal and danger and all kinds of things. Just imagine what the second term here is. If I were him, I would declare victory and go home. I know he won't do it, but I would. Mike, this is Mike, your problem now. But that's just the way it's going to be. All right, Michael Steele. Goodbye.
See ya.